This is the virtual commission meeting, special commission meeting of June 5th, 2020. Due to the public health emergency caused by COVID-19 and as authorized by Governor DeSantis's Executive Order 20-69 on March 20th, today's special city commission meeting is being held virtually with elected officials and city staff participating via Zoom. To participate or provide comments as such may come up during the virtual commission meeting, here's how you access us. You can either do it by telephone or by Zoom. If you do it by telephone, you need to dial 929-205-6099 or the toll-free number, which is 877-853-5257. And if you are on Zoom, you go to the Zoom site, which is zoom.us, and that should get you onto it. The webinar ID for Zoom is 88472526207, pound. And if you want to speak on an item, did I get that right, Ralph? No?
Actually, Mayor, you did not. Just let me repeat the numbers for you.
What's the Zoom webinar ID?
It is 825-5165-6717, pound.
Do it, say it again.
Yes, sir. 825-5165-6717, pound.
Thank you. If you want to speak on an item and we're having public testimony, you go to the Zoom app and you hit the little raised hand icon that looks like this. And if you want to speak on the telephone, you press *9 and that will let us know. With that, we're going to begin with the Pledge of Allegiance. And Ralph, you did such a good job in reading those numbers. Why don't you lead us in the Pledge of PJ? Could you please give us a flag to face? And Ralph, why don't you lead us in the pledge?
Yes, sir. Everyone, please raise your hand, put your hand on your heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay. So first of all, there are no announcements, I guess, during these meetings, right?
No, sir.
Okay. So, folks, colleagues, we have a short agenda. Just so you know, I have to have an operation on my wrist today. It's the only day they do it. So I'm going to be leaving the meeting, or at least moving to a phone as I make my way to University of Miami. And the vice mayor will take over to the extent there's items still pending. So I appreciate that. So we have a consent item. We have one single consent item, right?
Yes, sir, and it has not been separated, so it may be voted on.
So let's move that consent agenda.
Move the consent item.
Second.
All right, show it without objection, passed. Okay, Ralph?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so let's take up two items. And I wanted to say, one of them is mine and Commissioner Riola's. I think that's going to be quick, so if we can get to that first, and then we'll go to R7A, which is our COVID update. The two items. So let's bring up R9E and R9F.
R9E and R9F. R9E is discussed Miami Beach Police Department policy regarding use of force, and requesting to present a report in 90 days. This is an item sponsored by Commissioner Ariola. Second item, R9F, is discuss, present report on 6/24/2020, our next commission meeting of Miami Beach Police Department best practices. This item is sponsored by Mayor Gelber.
Commissioner Ariola, you can go first if you'd like, whatever you want.
Thank you, Mayor, for putting this on. I guess we were both thinking about it at the same time, as I'm sure all of us were. And I think these are companion items. We can merge them together. My thought here, obviously, with everything that's happening in this country and around the world, we take great pride as a city in our police department and having one of the best, if not the best, police department in the country. And I don't want to miss this opportunity to take advantage of leading in this area and take a look at all of our current practices, compare those to best practices, get input from our police chief, perhaps other experts, and just make sure that, you know, we adopt and practice all of the best practices in law enforcement, which I know that we do. This commission and previous commissions have been fully committed to funding the resources, whether it's technology, whether it's counseling for our police department. You know, we were one of the first police departments to have body cams. We're installing high-tech equipment throughout our city to keep our residents safe. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to lead in this area and not follow. So that's why I put this on the agenda. That's basically what I wanted to discuss today.
I had the same thought. Thank you, Commissioner Ariola. And look, we're all getting a lot of, the public would like to know, well, I think as Commissioner Ariola sort of previewed, we have a sense of what our police have done over the last few years, but the public may want to know. And there, of course, it's always a good time to reflect and see what you can do that's better and to lead. And as we all get a lot of these, a lot of folks asking, we ought to be able to publicly explain what our procedures are. And also, if there are things that the department or the manager believe we should do that really does lead even more. So that said, Commissioner, I had actually earlier in the week spoken to the chief and suggested a June 24th date. You have 90 days. I don't really care. I'll turn it to the manager to tell us what he'd like to do. I think you have a sense of it, right, Mr. Morales?
Mayor and Commissioners, obviously, with the events of the last few weeks, we are very proud of our department. A tremendous department. Every 3 years, rated by CALEA, is one of the highest rated in the country. We do believe we have best practices, and as we see these lists that come out from different organizations about demands that departments have to implement X, Y, or Z, I think you'll find when we prepare this report that we've done a lot, or not most of that kind of stuff. So I think. And Rick and his team are very proud of what they've done. We're happy to put together a report. I'll leave it to the chief, whether it's, the 24th is, I guess, 19 days. I think we can get that done. If you're looking forward to sort of what we're doing now, they're always looking to improve. And certainly I'll work with the senior command and talk about areas that, you know, we may want to look at some of the things that are going on. But we'll be happy to, I think we can put something together. Chief, correct me if I'm wrong, for the June 24th meeting, if you want, and with the things that we've done and the areas that we think were best practice. And also perhaps include in that, you know, areas that we're always looking at and studying, et cetera. So I think we can get that done by the 24th. I don't see why not. And we'd be proud to talk about the things that that we're doing. Obviously, I'm proud of the fact that our chief, together with all the Miami-Dade County chiefs, unanimously expressed their outrage at what happened in Minneapolis, and I know the chief and others, you know, chatted with the protesters in Coral Gables and you know, took a knee and acknowledged that some changes need to be made, and you know, certainly at a national level. So I think Chief Clemens showed that leadership, not just for our organization, but as a group of for the Miami-Dade chiefs as well, of which I should note the incoming president is David De La Spria, a major. Showing leadership at a regional level as well. So we'll be glad to do that, Mayor and Commissioner Ariola.
All right, Ricky, June 24th, and then we can always ask for something else.
Yeah, okay. I just said 90 days because, you know, with everything that's going on, I didn't want to put the chief in a tough spot. But if we think we get something sooner, that's certainly better.
Okay, all right. So that'll happen. We don't have to vote. All right, let's move to R9A. Commissioner Gongora, Commissioner Samuel, I'm sorry. Wait, hold on. I did not open up my for a while. Oh, yeah, there are the hands. Commissioner Gongora, you're on.
All right, thank you. I'll use the real hand if the virtual doesn't work. A couple quick follow-up points. Number one, I want to echo what Jimmy said, and I want to commend the chief on taking the stance that you did on behalf of the department. The photograph of our chief kneeling has made it in international publications everywhere. It says a lot about how we police. So I commend you on that. Number two, as an alternative, if you guys like, we have a standing commission item on crime at the Neighborhoods Committee. I deferred it until July so we could have a little time for the city to reopen. But I was planning on including information similar to your referral items at the neighborhoods committee at our July meeting, if you would like for it to happen there before coming to the commission. Regardless, I'm going to have it happen at neighborhoods, so I wanted to give you that heads up. And one of the questions that I'd like to also focus on, because we get it a lot, I get it, so I'm assuming we all get it, is why are we spending so much money on police? I get that question frequently. And I think we need to help educate those that are asking, the residents. My understanding has always been, even though we're a small city, we're policing for a very large tourism industry where, yes, we're 91 or so thousand residents, but we can have hundreds of thousands or more people, and hopefully will again after this pandemic is over. But I don't know if you could just touch on that issue very briefly, Jimmy. And I'd also like that to be part of the discussion going forward, is the financial component.
Okay. Yeah, Commissioner, that's a great question. You're right. If we were sort of a 90,000 person city in the middle of, you know, a cornfield somewhere where, and no one visited, we wouldn't need as large a police force, and frankly, probably even fire department. But because we do get, you know, nine, depending on, you know, who you listen to, 9 to 12 million visitors a year, all the special events that are hosted on this island, in order to meet that capacity demand, we do have to have a larger force, because our residents are often, in fact, our visitors are often, in fact, targets of, you know, people coming and knowing that our visitors come and are having a good time and maybe have imbibed too much, et cetera. And so we do have to protect our visitors and our businesses as well as our residents. And even our fire rescue, a lot of their calls often are, you know, calls on behalf of a resident, of visitors who come here and unfortunately get sick or something's happened. So we have to have a first responder capacity that is larger than you would expect for a 90,000 person city. But it's a good question, but it is why we have to do it, because they protect a much larger daily population. Our average daily population is probably 250,000 people. And on weekends, as you know, big weekends, as you pointed out, it can be hundreds of thousands of people. So we have to protect a much larger group than just our permanent residents.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Samuel.
Thank you, Mayor. And I appreciate my colleagues putting this item forward, and I share their confidence in our department, and I appreciate the leadership of Chief Clements. I just wanted to ask, and I'm sure our police department is familiar with it, but I think it would be a nice check. Just a reminder that actually the president back in 2015 released a report on 21st century policing. In my own quick review, I found this to be very comprehensive. They talked about the six pillars of policing: building trust, policy and oversight, technology and social media, community policing, training, and officer wellness. So this is a very comprehensive report. As we review best practice, I commend this report. I'd love to see how we stack up in these areas, and I look forward to a productive discussion.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Richardson.
Thank you, Mayor. I too want to just add my thanks to the police department and the leadership. I just want to be clear exactly what we're going to get, what the work product is going to be. It looks to me that your item, Mayor, is a report on best practices, and then Commissioner Areola is more focused on use of force. And could we just maybe somebody frame what is the work product that we're going to get so that, that we're all comfortable, and if we need to tweak it, we could do that now rather than waiting until we get the report. So what is the expectation, Mayor?
So I'll go, and then I'll invite Commissioner Areola. I spent a good deal of time. One of my jobs before I was mayor many, many years ago, I was a civil rights federal prosecutor. I did police cases as a prosecutor. So I learned a lot about use of force and excessive force and sort of rules of engagement, things like that. And it changes pretty regularly, the best practices. And the reason I put it on, and it sounded like the same reason Commissioner Areola did, is right now we're getting our, not just the country, but our residents are asking, what do we do here? What do we do here? What are where are we in this sort of the continuum of institutions, and how evolved are we? Are we current? Are we ahead? Are we behind? Are we constantly reviewing what our rules are with regard to use of force and best practices? And in fact, I'm sure you've been getting emails from residents. Some of them have these eight questions they're asking about whether you shoot at moving cars, whether you use chokeholds and things like that. I think I know the answers to most of those questions, which is, I think, and at least on those eight, we give the answers people would hope we give. But that all said, I thought it would be important to give our police department a chance to do two things. Number one, to sort of explain where we are in terms of what our practices are and how they compare to best practices. And secondly, to tell us if there are things they think we should be doing, that this moment in history has suggested that we should look at. One thing I have been really heartened by is that I feel as though our department, from the top, frankly, to the bottom, embraces the kinds of reforms and the kinds of best practices that other places may not embrace as quickly. So I have a lot of faith in our chief. I think he's done a great job, and I felt the same way about Chief Oates. So I'd like to see them come to us and say, this is what we're doing. We think this is right. Here's some things we may want to do. But I want to let them do that because I think that's appropriate. Commissioner Arriola, I don't know what...
Before we do that, let me just ask a question on your explanation. So you mentioned best practices related to use of force, but are we asking for a report that is beyond that? So are we asking for best practices on use of force and other best practices, or is your ask just best practices related to use of force?
My ask was, I think, probably within Commissioner Arriola's. When I saw his, I thought he probably explained it a little easier than I wanted to just put this on the agenda because I've been getting calls and emails from public, from residents saying, what do we do? And I said, well, instead of me going to the chief and getting answers and putting it out and going through that process, it seems to me it's an issue of enough import right now for us to spend a commission meeting where we let the chief say, this is the kinds of things we do in the area of use of force, not excessive use of force, because right. Use of force has a lot of dimensions to it. There are absolutely obviously legitimate reasons for use of force. There's ways you keep track of it. There are ways you counsel for it. There are rules about it. So I wanted to give our police department a chance to explain that so that our public knows sort of what we do. And frankly, I think it's something at this moment in time where transparency is a good thing. So that was my thinking. And Commissioner Shin, you had asked the question. I'd like Commissioner Arriola to have a chance to weigh in because he had an item.
Yeah. I think that if we're asking for best practices related to use of force, I think that's something that we could reasonably expect them to prepare for our June meeting. But if it's best practices in all of their police work, that's more comprehensive and may not be possible to get. That's why I asked the question. I understand, Commissioner Arriola. Go ahead. I'm sorry I weighed in there again, but go ahead.
You want me to go?
Yeah, I lost you.
Yeah, no, yeah. I don't know if it was my internet or what, but thank you. I had put, best practices, regarding, when and how use of force is implemented in law enforcement. But I did have actually a more expansive thought about it in terms of, using this opportunity to adopt, and I know we largely already do, if not entirely, the gold standard of policing. And so, we can start looking at use of force, but, what does it mean to be a law enforcement officer in the 21st century in an urban environment like ours? Use of force is one of those elements, but all of it, the selection process, the training process, transparency, the use of technology, counseling, police officers go through a lot. They're in a police department 20 plus years and throughout the life of of a police officer. Life events happen. Make sure that they have the proper counseling. And then, you know, what are the disciplinary processes and how transparent are they, so that if something were to happen, we can reassure the public that things were appropriate, and if not, that there's a remedy for it. You know, so take a comprehensive look at where we stack up towards, you know, best practices for a police department. But we could start with the use of force, but I do think we should take this opportunity to take a comprehensive look and make sure that what I think all of us instinctively know, that we are among the very best in the nation.
Yeah. Okay. Commissioner, we got some more hands up. Commissioner Minor.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. I just want to echo the support for our chief and the entire Miami Beach Police Department. I just wanted to, and I think this is great that we're going to cover the best practices and use of force. I think it's obviously a timely item. I also wanted to keep in mind, I think this is a separate conversation, but still one of the major issues I hear from residents all the time is about our police presence and patrol. And I think that's something we could also be very transparent about how our staffing works. We're very fortunate that our residents actually want to see more of our police officers. I think it's the ultimate compliment. So I just want to keep that in mind, probably a different report from best practices, but also something that's timely and we should keep on the radar.
Thanks. Okay, I see. Raul, you want to say something? You're the only one left.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to clarify the direction. So within the first 90 days, do you want us to come back with a report with regard to the use of force and then address the other issues, or do you want us to address all the issues within 90 days?
I think on June 24th, what we're going to expect is the chief is going to come back and he's going to talk to us about some of the use of force issues and best practices that are being talked about. A lot of them are, frankly, in emails and are in public discourse right now, but to talk about sort of what the department does, how it addresses it, how it approaches it, so that the public knows, and if he has some ideas and the manager has some ideas that they're thinking about because of recent events, because the whole nation is sort of focused on best practices, then we, of course, will hear, we'd like to hear that too. But I think he can do it on June 24th. And by the way, I think it's probably a good idea. This is not I think we would all unquestionably agree that elevating policing is not something that you do and then you don't ever do again. So coming to the Neighborhoods Committee in July is just fine. And probably this is not a discussion that ends on a certain day. It's something you think about a lot. So I think I would like to see it on June 24th. The chief has said he can, because I think the public would like to probably want to know. And we've been getting, I think, some very legitimate questions, which can be answered pretty easily, many of them. And I'd like that to be aired so the public gets a sense. Part of this is I'm very proud of sort of the culture of our department. I'm very proud of it. And I think it comes from the top down, but I think it permeates the department. And so I think our public ought to know that, but they also ought to know that they're focused on always improving. Commissioner Ayala.
Thank you, Mayor, for the clarification.
Yeah, you know, one thing, you know, if there's an appetite for this with everything that's happening, as we reopen the beach, you know, I'm mindful that, you know, coming up June 19th with Juneteenth, it's one of the most important celebratory days for the African-American community. It's the oldest sort of traditional celebration they have for the emancipation and ending of slavery that they mark that day. We might want to think about doing some at least small ceremonial event there, given the context in which we find ourselves. And as we reopen the beach, you know, maybe that's one of the first events that we have.
Commissioner Steinberg?
Okay, yeah, no, I didn't realize that my hand was still up. I was just gonna say I agree with the sentiment. You know, we pride ourselves on our commitment to diversity, equality, and inclusion. So we want to make sure that we're always striving to be better and to examine ourselves and make sure that, you know, when we hold a mirror up to ourselves, we truly are, you know, happy with that image. And So our commitment, you know, to have that dialogue and to maybe even go further is very important. So I support both amendments. Are you going to be combining them into one item?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not, we're not going to be voting. I think we're going to just get, we don't have to vote on it. I think it was a discussion and we're going to get a report. We don't need to vote on a report. And I think everybody's given our chief enough clarification as to sort of what it is. And it's not, of course, it doesn't matter because we could have it in another meeting afterwards if we want something more. That's the whole idea of what we do. So, Commissioner Earle, you still have your hand up. Are you that's just leftover?
It might have been leftover, but I mean, I raised an idea. I don't know if there's an appetite for it, but I personally think it would be a nice gesture for sure. To at least have something, whether it's on Lincoln Road or Ocean Drive or in a park, just to say that the city's celebrating this day and whoever shows up, shows up.
Hey, we can, Commissioner, we can work on something and try to put something together.
I for one would like that. I mean, you know, one of the first official acts we do as we open up is to say on this day, we're going to welcome guests to celebrate this.
Okay, I'm going to, before I recognize you again, I'm going to pass the gavel to the vice mayor. I'm going to now try to move my car. I'm probably just going to listen without saying much. I'm not sure how it's going to work on my phone while I'm driving. So vice mayor, you've got the gavel. The next item after this, after we finish discussing this, is R7A, which is an actual item to extend the state of emergency. And then after that, you've got a couple other updates and discussions, but I think the only thing you have to vote on, I can tell, is the extension of the state of emergency, and I'll hopefully be on for that discussion. So, Vice Mayor, you've got Commissioner Gangora, and you've got Ricky. Commissioner Ariel had raised an issue.
Okay, Commissioner Gangora.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. I believe this is in response to Commissioner Areola's idea about doing a commemoration. I would like to join you in that. And I've been asking our LGBT advisory committee to look into the inclusiveness of the rainbow flag. I know it sounds odd, but the rainbow flag has also changed over the years. We kind of hang the original one up at City Hall, but there is a new rainbow flag that includes brown and black and includes inclusiveness of different races and colors. And I've been wanting to look at that. And maybe if we do a little something June 19th, since it's Pride Month, we could incorporate both elements and recognize our commitment to the diversity as a whole, a small diversity recognition. So if you would, when you look at that in the administration, if you could expand that idea, that would be great.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Anything else? Final comments on this? You have direction? Are we all good? Seeing no objection, you have direction. Okay, we're going to move on to the next item. Item R7A.
And I'm asking the city manager if he wants to combine it with R9A, which is the discussion of the update.
Yeah, usually I know in the past you've had me do my update and then you guys discuss and go to R7A. We can do that. I'm prepared to give, it's a quick update, but it's a couple items if you want, Madam Chair.
Whichever.
Okay, so we're going to do R9A first, discuss update on COVID-19, and then we will go to R7A, which is the extend state of emergency.
Vice Mayor and Commissioners, and Mayor, if you're listening. As you know, we've been now in phase one of a reopening for nearly 3 weeks. The only thing we haven't opened yet, as you know, is the beaches. They were going to be opened this past Monday. We were ready for that, staffed and prepared. But then with the protests in response to the unfortunate event in Minneapolis, Mayor Jimenez has kept a curfew in place now for nearly a week, and has indicated he's keeping it through the weekend and tied the beach reopening to that. So I expect hopefully Monday, this coming Monday, June 8th, that we will then open the beach, which is really the last part of phase one. There are restaurants and retail operations that have not opened, despite the fact that they could. My guess is some may not open, unfortunately, but my guess is a lot of them are still waiting for the tourists to arrive. Given just like the question Commissioner Gangora asked earlier about why do we have so many police and first responders for a small city, our economic infrastructure is all also much larger than just our own resident base. And many of these businesses depend on tourism, and we're not going to open until then. So I think we'll see more of those businesses opening as now that the hotels are open and people start to return. We're now at the point for phase two. The governor this week issued orders sort of moving the state into a phase two. And Mayor Jimenez himself issued two orders last night, moving the county potentially into a phase two. And so just to walk through the things that over the coming days will therefore also be opening on the beach. And then we can talk about a couple that we want to consider. Today, short-term rentals, subject to obviously our city code, and let me preface, legal short-term rentals. Those short-term rentals that are allowed to operate under our city code can start receiving guests today. And the county has put forward some guidelines for that. And we will be putting those online during the course of the day today. And so the order we'll issue today will reflect that short-term rentals can come online. And I know I've got a lot of emails from folks ready to do that. On Monday, June 8th, the county has opened the door for, and unless you all have any objections, we certainly will be allowing dog parks, which was a pleasant surprise. We weren't sure that was coming, but dog parks can open on Monday. Gyms, wellness centers, massage studios and parlors, Pilates studios, all that litany of physical centers. Tattoo parlors can also open. Summer camps and youth sports can open on June 8th. It is our intention to start our virtual camp on Monday, and then our regular camp at reduced levels under the guidelines on June 15th. And so at this point, let me ask, I think I know John Rebar is on. John, if you want to talk a little bit about Monday, the virtual, and then what the 15th will look like with reduced capacity given the guidelines. John?
Good morning, Jimmy. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Yes, we received the good news that on-site camp could begin on June 8th. We will be prepared to do that on June 15th, but we are starting our virtual camp, as the manager mentioned, on Monday. And so far, we have 54 registrants for the various virtual programs. So we're excited to get that started next week. And now we're going to start planning on the regular camp. As I mentioned last week, camp will definitely be unrecognizable this year as compared to other years. Capacity will be greatly affected. To give you an idea, if you look at previous years, what we had on site at our centers for both our specialty camps and our traditional camp, the capacity this year will be 25% of that. That is a huge impact on the number of children that will be able to register. The reason for that is that there's strict guidelines as the number of occupants you could have in an area. And that is 10. So what does that mean? That means 9 children, 1 camp counselor per area. Staff has been able to get creative because you need to have a barrier. So we're taking our larger rooms. Let's use the Musk Park Pavilion as an example. That is one area, but we're going to be able to create barriers through the use of, you know, canvases and curtains to create 4 separate rooms. So instead of Musk Park Pavilion only being 10, 9 children, 1 counselor, we're at least going to be able to make it 36 children, 4 counselors. So if you take that idea, that principle, and take it through the various rooms in our community centers, our gymnasiums, auditoriums, and if you're familiar with the centers, it gives you an idea. But again, that now takes us from a number that was around 1,483 per week in our centers to around 369. So registration may not take place. I'm going to tell you why. Because I mentioned last week, the way that our childcare operates is, for many, we are full year childcare. They children go to after school, then they go to, you know, your winter break, your spring break camps, and they roll right over into summer camp. That registration for the rollover of 12-month care took place pre-COVID. Looking at the number of registrants we already have, comparing that to the maximum capacity of children that we could fit under these new guidelines, at this moment, I don't see an opportunity to open up for further registration. And I know that is going to cause a lot of anxiety and it's going to cause a hardship for many families, but that is the reality. It's not just us. I've been speaking to the Boys and Girls Club, the JCC, et cetera. We are all faced with these same rules. And hopefully through the various opportunities, parents can find care for their children, but it may not be where they were last year. So that's important to know, because I know that we're all going to receive emails, phone calls, et cetera, of parents who are trying to register. And as of this moment, registration most likely not be happening. It looks like our camp is full. That was an important point to mention. I want to just walk you just a little bit through what camp would look like, just to give you an idea, as your residents are reaching out to you and your aides, and for those who are watching on Zoom. Camp will be different in that the 9 children that are in the group, they are to stay together the entire summer. So we will not be mixing the kids amongst groups. Will they go from area to area? Yes, but they're going to stay within their same 9 children within the group, the same camp counselor throughout the summer. That also goes to the drop-off and the pickup. We're going to recommend to parents a certain time to drop. So those same children are arriving at the same time. We will, because I know that work schedules sometimes do not allow that type of flexibility, we still will be providing early and late pickup as we did in the past, but we're really recommending for the children to be dropped off during certain time periods. When the children are dropped off, there will be a health questionnaire that is required to be answered every morning. And the temperature of the child will be checked. After the health questionnaire is completed and the temperature checks fine, the child will then go ahead and sanitize their hands and enter into their assigned area for their camp. Like I said, it's going to be fun, but it's going to be different. Activities will be different, shared equipment. We won't be sharing equipment like we had in the past. Children will have their individual art supplies, et cetera. And then when we do switch from various rooms to rooms, each room will go through will be sanitized, and it'll give it enough time for the sanitizing agents to settle in before the next group goes in. So there's a lot of logistics going into this program. Mask. A lot of parents and a lot of people have questioned: will children be required to wear facial coverings? There will be times that, yes, during the camp day, they will be required to wear facial coverings. When will that happen? In restrooms, when transitioning from area to area. But it will not be required when they're inside of a group or outside and social distancing can be achieved. So the way that staff is planning camp is that the maximum time will be those times where social distancing can be achieved. Masks will not need to be worn. But they will need to put their facial coverings on when they're going from group to group or are in the restroom. We're also making one-ways, so children and groups would go traverse through the building in one direction. And this is also, groups are never crossing paths. You're trying to limit the amount where social distancing cannot be achieved, and staff is working on all of that. You could imagine there are so many details that are going into planning camp this year. I don't want to get too far in the weeds for you, but I wanted to give everyone who's watching and listening an idea and a picture in their head of, you know, what will be different, the temperature checks, the health questionnaires, and also really stress. We're at 25% capacity, and there's no changing that capacity. We have used every available interior space that we could possibly use. That's the traditional K through 8 camp. Last week, there was a question of whether or not we can do something for the tots. And it was suggested that maybe we could do a 2-hour program. And yes, we are recommending we offer a 2-hour day program at 3 different sites. One would be at Stillwater Park using the pavilion. Give the kids an opportunity to come out, be with the counselor, and run around, as was mentioned last week. And the other 2 sites would be Normandy Isle and the room at South Point Park. So we are recommending we do the K-8 camp as I just described, and also offering that two-hour-a-day something for the playtime group, since we're not able to hold a full-time camp for that age group. Gave a lot of information, and if you have any questions, I'm going to try my best to answer. And I also have staff available as well.
Thank you, John. Jimmy, anything else you'd like to add?
No, not with respect to parks, no. If there's any questions, we can take John, and then I'll continue.
I see Commissioner Gongora's hand is up. You're on mute, Commissioner.
Sorry, that was actually up from the prior item, so I apologize. But quick question, I guess, since I got called on anyway. So is the recommendation for the summer camps then Monday, June 15th?
Yes, we would be prepared for June 15th.
Okay. All right. I'll put my hand down. Thank you.
Commissioner Minor.
John, thanks for the report. Just curious, the two-hour for Camp for Tots, how did you derive at that number?
The hours per day?
Correct.
Yeah. It was it was mentioned last week that maybe we could do 2 hours. It's staffing availability, the fact that we need to be outdoors quite a bit, and that age group with the social distancing, the facial coverings, et cetera. It was a suggestion that we took, and we worked around that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, any other comments or questions from my colleagues? Seeing none, thank you, John, for that update. I just stress that if we could still continue talking to MDCPS to maybe use Feinberg Fisher or Biscayne Elementary or some other school facilities so that we can maybe expand enrollment, that would be great. So whatever you can do on your end, I know you're talking with them, but whatever more we can do would be helpful. All right.
Vice Mayor, at that point, for example, as you know, we do a great teen program at Nautilus, but they're not allowing us to use Nautilus this summer. So we will continue to try, but they have not thus far made their facilities, and it is frustrating. Continuing on, Mayor Jimenez last night issued two orders that I would describe as sort of taking us into phase two. One is one that I think we're already doing, which is he indicated that bars, pubs, nightclubs, lounges, cabarets, and breweries, if they also have a license as a food service establishment under Chapter 509 of the Florida Statutes, then they can sell food and alcohol in conformance with the rules for restaurants, that they can, in a sense, operate like restaurants are operating now, which means the bar is closed, it has to all be table service, the distancing. And we already doing that. We do have a lot of those kind of establishments that have. We are already doing that and allowing places that have a restaurant license as well, a food license, even though they may be primarily a bar. We are allowing them to function as a restaurant with table service only. So I think this is something we're already doing. We'll formally more incorporate it in the order as a phase two, but we always thought that this was something allowable under the restaurant. So I don't think that's a significant change for us. The next item, though, I think is a bit more significant, and that is the mayor indicated that, the Mayor Jimenez, that movie theaters, concert houses, auditoriums, playhouses, bowling alleys, arcades, indoor amusement facilities, and casinos, we don't have one of those, can open, provided, however, such venues submit to the mayor of the county and receive approval from the county a reopening and operation plan for COVID-19 mitigation in accordance with a handbook and then operate as such. So this is something that had not been discussed at all in any of the meetings I was part of, or I know Vice Mayor Steinberg, the League of Cities. We hadn't really talked about any of this stuff. This is a significant step. Obviously, you're talking about venues like the Fillmore or things like that would be a part of this. And I appreciate that in part, you can't come up with guidelines for all of these facilities. They are all unique. So I respect that we want to ask the facilities to come forward, but the question really is, are we ready at this point to see these things move forward? At a minimum, certainly we would want to review those plans and approve them as well. But I guess my question really is, I had personally not thought we were ready to go to these larger type facilities where social distancing is more challenging. But I think it's a worthy discussion because Mayor Jimenez at least is open. Again, they're not open Monday. They're not open a specific date. He's willing to entertain proposals from these institutions on how they would reopen, what would be the rules and whatnot. Again, we're not, it's no commitment, but that is now part of his most recent order. And it does begin to open a broader phase of the economy. For us, that would include the Fillmore, the Colony, I guess the New World Symphony and some other venues, the Band Shell. And the question is whether, as a body, you all feel we're ready to do that. I'm not sure we are, but then again, we've been open for 3 weeks and, you know, we haven't seen the kind of surge or anything. So it's for discussion.
Thank you, Jimmy. I see some hands are up for my colleagues. Commissioner Minor, your hand is up.
Yeah, Jimmy, I was just going to say, it sounds like you first learned of this last night on some of these issues. So I'd certainly want to give you the time to reflect and come up with what you view as best practices moving forward. So I'd be curious to hear that before we make any final decisions.
Yeah, we did just find out last night about this particular order and have not had a chance, obviously, to look at it more carefully or even talk with the county about it. I know our law department had a question whether or not the county could even do this in light of without asking the governor to open those sectors up. And maybe this is part of the plan, but we really haven't had a chance. But I wanted to at least put it on the table as part of the conversation this morning.
Commissioner Arriola, your hand is up.
Yeah, as you might guess, I would strongly favor this. The sooner we get going, it's going to take a while to get these businesses open anyway. So the sooner we start, the better. I mean, I doubt the Fillmore is going to be booking acts anytime soon because that's going to take a while, but we might as well let them know that they're allowed to open so they can start working up plans. I know that the Colony Theater would be appreciative as well. I mean, to put on a play, you got to call back actors and start that whole process. So there's no harm in getting the process rolling. And I think, you know, as you said, Jimmy, we've been open 3 weeks, nothing's happening. I've been saying that was going to be the course of events. We look at other states that have been open for over a month, nothing's happening there. We've got protests where we've got thousands of people jammed together, you know, shoulder to shoulder, no social distancing. We'll know in a couple of weeks, but again, I'm going to predict nothing's going to happen. So I would definitely move forward in a direction to open these, given now that we have the ability to do so. And, you know, let's please finally open the beaches. It's getting beyond ridiculous.
Commissioner Richardson.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Well, Jimmy, as you just said, we don't even know if anybody wants to. So maybe what we need to do first step is just put out some guidance to say, if you want to move forward, why don't you send us your plan and express your interest? So, you know, I think the county plan is going to require a detailed working plan. So maybe the first step is just to ask these institutions in our city if they want to open. If they do, what's their plan? And then we can move forward from there. I don't think we need to make a blanket decision today, because I think it's really difficult. All of these institutions are different. And so it's going to be very hard for us to have a very strict set of guidelines for all of them because they're different. But and Jimmy, do you know if any of them want to open today?
I know, I think that the Rhythm Foundation would love to open up the Band Shell. I'm pretty sure that they've reached out to us. I know that Miami New Drama would probably love to get going sooner rather than later at the Colony. The New World Symphony usually is off the summer anyway, I think. That's not their season. And I think, as Commissioner Earle said, a lot of acts are not going touring and things like that. There is value. I think there is value to at least making them think about it, because each facility is different. And there is no downside
like the band
to
shell,
to put together a plan.
Yeah. Like the Band Shell, for example, is outdoors. So that one seems easier, and they may already have a plan. So anyway, that'd be how I would do it, is just ask people what they want to do and what their plan is, so we can take a look at it and look at each plan individually. Thanks, Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Commissioner Gongora.
Thank you. Yes, I think for our purposes today, we just need to give the direction that we're okay with it when they're ready to open. So yes, I agree with the comments of my colleagues. When they're ready to open safely and whatever appropriate plan that is approved to make sure that people are safely able to attend events, that we should do it. So I think the direction today should be go forth, let them know that this is on the table. I think also more outdoor events are probably going to be preferred places for sure, like the band shell. One of the things I've talked with you about, Jimmy, is some of our businesses, this is a little sub-issue of entertainment, but some of our businesses, like the Palace, are reliant on their performers being able to do things outdoors. Is there any ability here to allow those performances to occur safely again so that they can get that business up and running?
Well, and Commissioner, I'm glad you reminded me, because it was another part of the order that Jimenez did on bars and nightclubs and lounges, et cetera, is that if they have performers, and I'm reading this almost verbatim, the performers must be not less than 10 feet from the patrons, and the patrons must be seated. So it does create an opportunity, but it, I don't know if that works for the Palace's layout, for example, if that's one of them, or Mango's or some of the other places that have performances, but it does sort of foresee performers, but not less than 10 feet from the patrons. So there has to be that kind of distance, and the patrons must be seated. So, for example, at a nightclub, people would have to be seated at, you know, a table to watch a show or something. And obviously that would only be at places that even have the right to have entertainment. So
that's interesting. I think that is a step forward for them, especially now that Ocean Drive is closed and they can expand onto the drive. I think they could place their performers 10 feet away while people are eating. It's not the usual fun way that they're used to operating, but I think it's a step forward to hopefully rebuild that business. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Samuelin.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. I want to touch on three topics. First is the direct question that the manager put forward about the venues, the movie theaters. I would sort of underline Commissioner Gongora's comment about safely. If indeed we can do it safely and there are protocols to do it, that sounds good. So I would ask that we consult, Mr. Manager, with our Health Advisory Committee. I would like to hear their perspective on it. I would be curious next time we talk about this to hear what other municipalities are doing, City of Miami and others. And finally, I would look forward to your recommendation under what criteria and for which venues you would proceed. So those are my thoughts on that. I also heard a comment about the beach, and I would just like Mr. Manager to get a couple things on the record if we could. There's a lot of desire from the community to proceed, and I believe we're all well aware that the decision, we had made the decision to open the beach, but then got caught up with the curfew. So could you give us just a little color on two things? One, any information you have on when the beach may be opening, and two, some sense of the rationale why this sort of got linked together, just so the public has a better understanding. And I have one other topic once I hear from you on that.
Yeah, my sense is that, remember, under the guidelines that the county mayor issued for the beaches, one of the first guidelines was that the beaches should reopen on a weekday, not a weekend. So once the mayor Jimenez decided that he wanted to keep, the curfew in place for Friday night, that pretty much meant that we were not going to open the beaches because we weren't going to open on a Saturday or Sunday. So he extended it through the weekend. My own feeling is that unless something happens over the weekend, problematic from a safety perspective with protests or anything, that the beaches would be opening up on Monday. I think what drove it mostly, remember, the county had made a commitment to provide security ambassadors to all the beach communities, plus its own beaches. You know, it has all of Crandon and obviously Hollover. So part of it was that the concern that because of the drain on law enforcement resources this last week to protect both protesters and the community and the make sure everything was going peacefully, that he wouldn't have the staffing in place to do social distancing on the county beaches or provide the additional staffing to the cities. He's giving us, for example, 140 people daily in two shifts. So I think that drove it mostly. I'm sure there was also an element of a concern that given, you know, unrest and whatnot, we didn't want that potentially to spread to the beaches. But I think it was driven more by resources than anything else. Either way, as you know, we're bound by it. So, but we anticipate, we were ready Monday. We're ready. Adrian and his team and police and everyone were ready to go. We had the signs out already and everything. So as soon as we get the green light, we will open up. And we're anticipating it will be Monday morning is our current anticipation.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. That's very informative, and I think the community would embrace, I know I would, the ability now for folks to go to the beach perhaps as soon as Monday. My final comment relates to City Bike. We as a board are unanimously on the record that we would like that opportunity. And I realize we're waiting, I believe, on the county. But, you know, during this time, people are relying on cycling. We don't have the trolley in place for obvious reasons. So I would, one, like to see us do whatever we can to accelerate. And two, anything you could add in terms of what the holdups are and what you could share, because people really do rely on that.
Yeah, and I know that the it's not just a Miami Beach issue. I know Miami also has a City Bike program. And I do believe everyone's been talking to the mayor of the county, including, I think, the owners of City Bike to get open. Mayor Jimenez, I know, has expressed a concern still about outdoor type of equipment. So, for example, in his orders on parks, when he opened the parks, even for passive use, he kept closed bike racks and outdoor exercise equipment and playgrounds and whatnot. And I think his medical advisors that have looked at it continue to express concern about outdoor equipment. And I guess City Bike falls into that outdoor equipment that lots of people touch. That's the only rationale I can think of. We will continue to talk to him about it. We, at some point, you know, we had even reached out to our own medical team who felt comfortable that certainly outdoor exercise equipment and bike racks were things that, you know, particularly if you have wipes available and whatnot, could be opened. They still had some concerns about playgrounds because with small kids, the social distancing and things like that is more challenging. But certainly, I think we probably could get there with bike racks, City Bike, and we're hoping that he'll maybe change his mind on that. And we'll talk with him continually. But I think he's looking at those together with things like bike racks and outdoor equipment as things that a lot of people throughout the course of the day touch and are more difficult to keep clean. But I think there's a way to do that with the wipes, and I'm sure City Bike would put up whatever infrastructure was necessary to do that.
Thank you. That's everything, Ms. Vice Mayor.
Thank you. I see Commissioner Arriola's hand is back up.
Yeah, Jimmy, to that point, we do got to urge Mayor Jimenez to open up our children's playgrounds and the outdoor gyms. I don't know what the holdup is on that. Same with the City Bikes and bike racks. There is zero medical evidence that it exposes any risk. And it's also completely illogical and consistent with, you know, allowing golf courses to be open where people are using golf carts, right? I mean, you know, parents take care of their children. They can wipe down playground equipment before their kids jump on it. And again, this is a virus that really does not expose children. I mean, you know, to listen to these doctors that he's listening to, and I've been listening to them. I mean, a month ago, one of them was saying that don't open the beaches because coronavirus can be in salt water. I mean, it's insulting to the intelligence, some of the advice they're giving him. And, you know, all we can do is urge him, but I urge you to continue to urge him. I understand he is also getting advice from the League of Cities, and he has frequent calls. But as I understand it, we don't have a representative on the executive committee, which is the one he seems to be listening to the most. And what can we do, Vice Mayor Steinberg, about getting you on that executive committee? Because we don't have a voice with the county mayor. And I think he needs to hear from us.
Yeah, I will say that while I'm not on the executive committee that's comprised of five members, the president, vice president, treasurer, secretary, and first vice president, I do represent the city on the regular board of directors, and we do have a weekly Tuesday morning Zoom call that Jimmy actually has been participating weekly and actually really giving a lot of great information and trying to be a collective voice to influence the executive committee when they do speak to the mayor. And I'll continue to try to do my part in making sure that they have our ear. But with that, does anybody else have anything that they'd like to say? Ricky, your hand is still up. Do you want to mention anything else? No. Okay, you're done. Jimmy, anything else before you conclude?
No, that was my update. I think a couple of the items on the agenda will address some other issues, but that was my update on where we are.
Okay. One thing, did you mention anything about tennis doubles? Are we going to be allowed to do that?
It's interesting because that had been one of the items. Dog parks and doubles tennis were the two things that Jimenez was getting pressure on. He did lift the restriction on dog parks, but right now tennis is still a singles game under his orders.
Okay. All right, well, let's do what we can to try to put as much logic and common sense into some of these orders. All right, so with that, we have then item R7A to actually vote on extending the state of emergency, and do I hear a motion? Anybody move it?
I'll move the item.
I'll second it.
All right, all in favor?
Can I ask a question?
Yes, of course.
Okay. I'm prepared to support the emergency powers today for another week, but I think between now and next week, the administration and legal team need to let us know what the purpose will be to continue this moving forward, because it seems like almost all of the things that we originally wanted to have the emergency powers in place for, to monitor the beaches, to monitor the parks, to monitor all the items that we've been discussing today were there. But as we move forward in June, at some point we need to stop the emergency power order and go back to our normal course and order of business. So I wanted to put it out there. I've been going along with these because I thought it was important and necessary during the pandemic. But I think as we move towards normalcy, there becomes less and less of a reason for the emergency powers. So I will support today's motion, but I need to have some more compelling reason next week for it to go forward.
City Attorney Aguila?
Commissioner Congora, that's a great question. I can address it now. One of the reasons that we have the emergency powers still in place, as does the state and the county and practically every other city in Miami-Dade County, at least, that we deal with, is it allows us in terms of timing to issue things more rapidly, particularly with regard to executive orders that may need to be issued. As you see, they come in at night, and they change policies for the next day. So I think one of the main reasons with regard to the reopening, and this is, as you said, and you're very right, a matter of policy as to whether the commission wants to keep doing it. And the fact that we're having weekly meetings, might mitigate that. But I think the biggest advantage of keeping the emergency powers in place during the reopening is for purposes of allowing the manager to do things in real time. And I know a lot of the time he'll check with the commissioner and you get weekly COVID updates, but that's the main priority for doing it with regard to COVID-19. So as you go forward, my suggestion would be that you weigh whether that's worth it or not. I don't know if Jimmy wants to weigh in as to any other support, but the biggest support that I see for keeping the powers in place is it allows us to move more quickly and cut through bureaucratic tape. But some of you may think that was more urgent at the beginning of the pandemic than it is now, particularly since we're in phase two of the gradual reopening. So that was really what I wanted to contribute to the discussion and the benefit that I see of keeping the emergency powers in place. But I just want to reiterate, at the end of the day, it's your call.
Right, and we don't want to be at the whim of the county. So, Jimmy,
right.
Do you want to say anything? Or Commissioner Correct. Richardson?
Good point, Commissioner Steinberg. It also allows us to be stricter than the county.
Commissioner Richardson, please.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Raul, I think that was well said. You know, we changed the emergency order a few weeks ago because I wanted to make it a little bit more restrictive, and everybody agreed that that was the way we should go. Let me just give you an example of why I think we need these emergency powers. Jimmy just asked us about the Fillmore and some other entities and whether or not we want to open those. And we said, well, let's find out if they're interested. He could make a decision. If somebody came to him tomorrow, he could make a decision to open one of those, but he no longer has the authority to make decisions that we cannot undo. So he could do that tomorrow. And when we meet in a week, we could say to him, Jimmy, we appreciate that you took that action and we gave you that authority, but we have a different direction we want to go in. So we're going to undo that now. And I know he just had to issue some emergency orders the other day, which if we didn't like right today, we could undo those. So I'm comfortable that we have now limited his emergency powers. I think for at least the foreseeable future, the next few weeks, he needs to have that ability to move and move quickly. But again, we are limiting his ability to make decisions that cannot be undone. And I am very comfortable with that right now, since we're meeting on a very regular basis. I think it sends a very clear message to our community that the commission, the elected officials, are still making the decisions in this city. So with that, I think we have moved the item and it's been seconded.
Anybody else wish to speak or be heard? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Yes. Okay. All right.
And since the mayor is online, I'm going to count him as a yes.
All right. Thank you. We're going to now get an update on R9C, please.
Oh, R9C is R9B. Update on Small Business Assistance Program.
Excuse me. My apologies. Is this a time? No, R9B, 10:30 a.m.
It's time start. Sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
So, Jimmy, don't mess me up. No, I'm kidding.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't realize it was time start.
While none of these are public hearings, there are a couple hands up. So if they're germane to what's being discussed and on this agenda, we'll take a couple minutes just to take a couple callers, because they did announce at the beginning of the meeting that they would take a couple callers. So we'll start with caller, last four digits, 5235, you're on.
Okay. Thank you very much. My name is Steve Collin. I live at 5025 Collins at Capo Bella. I want to thank the commission. Good morning to you all, and thank you for your hard work. I was born in Miami Beach and still live here. This is about a health issue, and I spoke to Rafael Paz in the city attorney's office, and it's in reference to wearing facial coverings in condominiums. Dade County ordered 23-20 on facial coverings for common areas for employees and visitors, covers hotel lobbies and protects the employees and visitors there, but it does not cause condo residents to wear facial coverings in the common areas. I'm surprised that the residents of my building, many of them are not wearing facial coverings, and it's a gap in this order 2320. The condo association and the manager have no way of enforcing except suggesting that they wear the masks, unless this is extended, just like the order in 2320 for the hotel lobbies and the hallways and the common areas. So what I'm asking is this, that the commission, and now that you've mentioned the emergency powers, Raul, et cetera, and all of you, this is something that can be done immediately. There is no reason not to have the people who live on Miami Beach, young and old, protected in their condos in the common areas. We could just be ahead of the county The county hasn't addressed this because no one's brought it up, apparently. I know that...
2 minutes are up.
Sorry. All right. They keep a good time, I guess. Claudia, you're next. Claudia, you're on. Okay, maybe we'll come back to Claudia. Sue, you are the next caller in. Sue, can you hear us?
Sue, please unmute yourself. Sue, please unmute yourself.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Can you hear me? Okay, great.
They're keeping a 2 minute watch and they're being pretty, okay.
Right. Then my question is whether the governor's order to require those from the four states to self-isolate for 14 days is still in effect. This is a question for Mr. Morales. And if so, what implications does that have for hotels and those who are going to be doing Airbnb? Wouldn't that mean that anyone who comes from those states has to then stay in their room? So please update us on that.
Thank you, Sue. Morales.
Yeah, the governor's order on that point is still in place that requires them to self-quarantine. I do know that at least at this point, the hotels are not going to be enforcing that rule. They don't believe that that's an obligation they have. We had in the past when we got reports from the state, they used to at some point provide names to us of people who are arriving so we could reach out to them and make sure they quarantined. I don't believe we're getting that information anymore. And Chief Clemens can verify, but it's at some point we were reaching out to individuals who arrived and letting them know they needed to self-quarantine. But the hotels are not who will know where people are coming from are not going to do that. They've indicated. And so unless we get information, we can't. Now, if somebody knows at a condo or at a hotel and they reach out to us, we could certainly then communicate and encourage. But it's limited right now, our capacity to do that.
Thank you. Our next caller, again, we're going to go back to Claudia. Claudia, are you there?
Hello.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I be since 85, and I'm applaud.
I'm sorry, Claudia. We're having a bad connection. We can't.
Can you hear me now?
It's very difficult.
Hello.
Yes.
Okay. I thank the police department, but besides that, more presence of Lincoln Road, I think of the police. We have been threatened by a group of guys.
I'm sorry, Claudia. We don't have a good connection. We can't hear you. You're not coming through clear. Hello, we may have lost her. All right, let's take the next caller, Jeff Cohen.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. So this is a question, so please respond if you would before moving on. I just wanna see if it's possible, you know, I actually for the first time tried to go to the testing site yesterday and it was closed because of the weather apparently. So is it possible to get some kind of mechanism in place where they can update the public as to their status? In other words, if they're about to close, if they are closed, or for example, I don't know how often they go through the test before closing times. In other words, if they're not closed, but they've gone through all the available tests for the day, maybe that can be on the Twitter account. Maybe they can just create a new Twitter account for this purpose, but someone on site to be able to update the public before you know, maybe we drive out there and spend the time to do that, only to get there and find it closed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jimmy. Yeah. With respect to the site, first of all, they can do up to 750 swab tests daily, and they haven't run out except for maybe a couple days early on. So at least right now, running out of tests is unlikely. Generally, the rule they have is that when there's lightning potential or, you know, very severe storms, they will close, but they usually then reopen at some point. And it's probably just a, you know, moment by moment decision. We can certainly ask if they have an opportunity to, I'm not sure if they're even up on social media or whatnot, or if they can get us information. But they do, you know, you have folks out there exposed. So I do know that when there's lightning, they always close. And I don't know what else in terms of severe weather, but we can ask. Heather Shaw can reach out to Robbie Meeks, who's on site from OEM, and see if there's any way we can try to provide some real-time communication on their decisions when they open and close. But it's probably a good guess. If the weather's pretty bad, probably it will be closed.
Thank you, Jimmy. Chris, next caller, and then we have one more.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
First, I want to echo Commissioner Areola's point with it's a very powerful image of Chief Clements kneeling, and he's always been readily available. I've talked to him at times, and I think our police department very much emboldens what it is to for community policing. So they're always out. They know the residents, and they're able to spot when things are out of place, which I think is very important. On another point, I guess, so the tax base is not yet certified until July 1st, but there's only going to be an increase of about 3.5%. And with the GO bond now hitting the first phase on the tax bills, I'm wondering what kind of budget hard choices the city is making. I know Commissioner Areola has advocated for some time about trimming waste and redundancies. I think, with the exception of police and public safety, our city's been overly bloated in payroll and staffing costs. And then I guess my other concern also is the rental assistance program that wasn't really rolled out appropriately. It seems that all of the spots were given to friends and family of staff members when it should have gone into a lottery. So this is the type of waste that I'm concerned about and that needs to be addressed before we hit a serious budget shortfall, and certainly passing on to taxpayers by an increase in millage rate with the GO bond hitting is certainly not going to be appropriate without making the tough budget decisions. So I think now's the time to address that. It's a serious issue. I'm composing an email. I think we need to be attracting top talent for director level and above from outside so that people don't get comfortable in their positions.
2 minutes
off. Leads to fraud and abuse.
Madam
Chair, if I have to respond. I mean, this issue that the money went to friends and family, I challenge anybody to have any evidence that that happened. The rental program was done on a first come basis, first come, first qualified. They had to meet qualifications. We haven't even gone through it all. There are 53 funded households for a total of $97,000. There are 68 applications in the queue. The average award is about $1,800. It's very easy for people to get on and just say things that are completely not substantiated. And Maria and her team are working their butts off. I say that politely, their butts off. Delivering food, processing forms. I mean, they're working around the clock, and we've had added extra staff for anyone to question their integrity. Anyone who knows Maria and her team knows that's a complete joke. And I'm sorry I had to say that, but we're administering it the best we can. And I just had to say that because I don't think that's right.
Okay. We have our final caller, who's the caller who called in before, who had technical difficulties. With the last four digits, 5235, we're going to try to give you another opportunity right now. Can you hear us? Hello, you're on.
Hello?
Yes.
Am I on?
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to finish up and see what the response was, because this is a simple solution. The facial mask protecting the people in the community includes the people in the condominiums. And the I know the city manager had some issues talking to the city attorney as to consistency with the county, but this is an inconsistency. This is just filling that gap, telling everybody that they have to wear a mask inside a condo association. It's a simple solution, and it's a health issue, and I, you know, my health concern and for my neighbors is the same. So I asked somebody on the commission to address what I just brought up.
Okay, thank you so much. All right. Jimmy, do you want to quickly touch on that? Because the public...
My understanding, I'm not sure it's an inconsistency issue. I don't think, and Raul, correct me, I don't think the county order requires it. So we are consistent with the county on that. The question is to whether or not we want to require it. You know, we had treated, you know, condos and in hotels it's required. And I think part of that is you've got people coming from all over the country and all over the world. People don't know each other. I think in the condos, it's probably a bit more relaxed because people choose to live there and they know their neighbors and whatnot. But, you know, if that's something to consider from the commission from a policy perspective wants to consider. But we did not implement, county did not require it. I don't think the governor required it. So it's not an inconsistency. It's just a question of whether or not we want to be stricter in some fashion.
That's correct, Mr. Manager. It is not inconsistent because the county order doesn't require it. So again, and this is one of the reasons for keeping the emergency orders in place. The city can be stricter under its emergency powers, but you know, we have chosen to follow the county's directive.
Okay, and now since technically we didn't have any public hearings, I still wanted to let the public speak since I saw their hands were up. And now that that's been concluded, we're going to just, before the 10:30 time certain, quickly, I know the city clerk has an item, R9D, to discuss presentations and awards during virtual commission meetings. Ralph?
Yes, ma'am. I've been given direction that standalone presentations meetings are not to occur. But when we don't have standalone presentation meetings, such as our June 24th meeting, presentations have been included. Right now, there's 7 presentations on the agenda, so I wanted some guidance as to whether those should be rolled over until these emergency measures are concluded, and if we are going to have them, what time should we have them?
Okay, anybody? Let me see here. Commissioner Gongora, your hand is up.
It was actually on what we were discussing before. I don't have a strong preference. I think while we're meeting virtually, probably it's best to roll over the presentations and awards to July. I don't think we should take up time from the commission meeting right now on those.
Okay, Commissioner Minor.
Right, and maybe Jimmy can address this, but I understand that Governor DeSantis may order our commission meetings to be in person starting in July. So that would be a great opportunity to do the in-person presentation.
Commissioner Richardson?
I'm in favor of rolling those over until we can meet. And I just wanted to add, I actually raised my hand in response to the caller that called in. And I want to add my comments now that, Jimmy, I'm so glad that you responded, because I was so offended that someone would call in and accuse this city government of favoring people with no evidence. If anyone has any evidence that this process has been abused in any way, they should call the inspector general and make a referral. I know many people who did not get in on it because of the limitation. And for someone just to call in and make an accusation with no proof is insulting to all of us. So, Jimmy, I'm glad you spoke up. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Richardson. City Clerk, you have your direction.
Yes, Vice Mayor.
Vice Mayor, can Jimmy just address the issue of when our in-person meetings will take place?
Yes, of course. I was just going to get to that.
The governor's most recent order, if you remember, the governor order had lifted, in a sense, suspended the meeting in the sunshine rules that applied during this pandemic to allow meetings to occur virtually, so that you didn't have to have a quorum present physically in one room. His most recent order now, that will end June 30th, which would mean that starting in July, we would go back to the rule that if meetings would have to be in the sunshine, in the sense that at least a quorum would need to be present in the chambers or in whatever room a sunshine meeting has to take place. I do know that Mayor Jimenez and I believe the county clerk, Harvey Rubin, are going to be submitting a request to the governor to extend that perhaps through the summer. I know the League of Cities is going to take a position on that as well. I think Vice Mayor Steinberg at yesterday's full board meeting, that was discussed. And I know that other cities and counties are going to make the same request. And the governor, I'm sure, will take it under advisement. My guess is he, even if he just extends it through July, that will have the effect of the whole summer, because many governments, ourselves included, usually don't have sunshine meetings in August. I know the county doesn't either. So that will request will be made of the governor, and hopefully he will oblige. I know the courts, the Supreme Court Chief Justice Kennedy has issued, through the summer, that courts can meet by Zoom and have hearings and things like that. So one would hope that the same rule will be applied. But right now, until he does that, it is June 30th. Vice Mayor, I know that on R9C, Eric didn't have a chance to actually provide the update on the small business.
Okay.
I know you took a question from the public.
I did. I thought that R9B and R9C, while they're not the same item, they kind of interrelate. Okay. And so we are at the time certain, and it is 10:31. We're going to take R9B, and then we'll roll into R9C.
Correct, Vice Mayor. Just for the record, Commissioner Higgins is on the attendee side, and she is on item R9B. So I'm asking communications to please transfer her. R9B is discuss opportunities for MB business in RISE MD fund. This is an item requested by Commissioner Samuelin.
I see our city attorney's hand is up. Is there something you wanted to tell us before we proceed?
Yeah, thank you. Very briefly, I wanted to touch upon the last item that Jimmy discussed regarding the virtual public meeting exemption that's currently in place and the potential expiration of the exemption on June 30th. I've also reached out to the League, as well as I've spoken to Weiss Arota, who represents a lot of the smaller municipalities in Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County. And essentially, I think I speak for the majority that nobody's prepared for the virtual meeting exemption to expire on July 30th. So my request would be that this commission adopt and make a motion if it deems it appropriate, and adopt an after the fact resolution urging the governor to keep the extension in place. As the manager said, at least through July 30th. My preference would be August 30th, but July 30th would get us through our meetings and into the recess. So if we could go back to that item, if somebody wants to make a motion or a second, if they think it's appropriate, I think that that would help in transmitting that to the governor, in addition to all the efforts being made via other channels.
Thank you, Raul. Commissioner Samuelin.
Yes, thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Just a question for the city attorney. If we made that resolution and we were provided that right, correct me if I'm wrong, we would not be obligated. We could elect to have a meeting. It would just give us the option. Is that correct?
Correct. The authority is within the governor's authority. So it would just be a resolution urging and recommending the governor to keep the telemeeting exemption in place through July 30th, in order for the city of Miami Beach to conclude its regular meeting agenda prior to going into its August recess, something like that.
Yep.
But so it's really just an urging the governor. It's made in good faith. It's, you know, it's not anything that's binding. And prior to that, the commission could certainly go live if it wants to. But I just wanted to report, in addition to what the manager said, that I spent the greater part of yesterday, just canvassing and speaking to other city attorneys. And this is, it would be a hardship for other municipalities. The other issue is there's a cost issue that may be involved in re-noticing or publishing additional notices to advise that we're going from virtual to live. So there are practical considerations as well. So, you know,
Understood.
I don't think it's a controversial.
Thank you. Okay. Commissioner St. Milan?
Yeah, just to follow up. So I will go ahead and make the motion as the city attorney described. Importantly, the practical considerations, and it provides us the option. If we choose to do something different, we could. So I will make the motion through July as he recommended.
Commissioner Richardson, your hand is up.
I'll second that motion. I think it's important for us to send that message to the governor's office.
Thank you.
Thank you, City Attorney Aguila, for bringing that to our attention. We appreciate it. So seeing no objection, by acclamation. Okay, so now we're going to go back to item R9B, as in boy.
We're ready to proceed.
Welcome, Commissioner Higgins, for joining us today.
Hi, everyone.
Thank you, Madam Vice Mayor. I'm going to tee this up and delighted that Commissioner Higgins can be with us. She's going to be the main course here in presenting, but I'll give a little bit of the appetizer. We all know how challenging this time has been for our small businesses. The county had a small business fund, but they actually have proceeded with a much bigger amount of money on Tuesday. So there's a bunch of money out there, and I think it's a very exciting program. It's called RISE. Importantly, it's a revolving loan fund. It's not a grant. And so I think one of the most exciting things about this is that it gives us the potential for something for our businesses that could be sustainable. So what I think's most important today and why I thought it was important for us to engage, one is that we all get the basic information. What is this program? How do we make sure that Miami Beach businesses get their fair share and frankly, maybe even a little more? And then I also think that this program might get the creative juices going for us as we proceed. So delighted to hand the floor over to Commissioner Higgins, who will give a little more of the specifics around this program, which she sponsored.
Commissioner Higgins, thank you. Welcome.
Well, good morning, everybody. I did want to take this opportunity to update the Miami Beach Commission on two programs for small businesses that the county has initiated that, of course, small businesses from the city of Miami Beach are both welcome and encouraged to participate in. So the first one we launched last commission meeting, so around 2 weeks ago, and that is a $5 million fund, and it's called the Small Business Assistance Forgivable Loan Fund. These loans are part of, they came from a different part of the CARES Act. They came through HUD. And so they have a few constraints. You've got to be smaller than 25 employees. You would not have been able to, which most of these littler companies didn't get PPP. So you wouldn't have gotten other federal aid programs. But there is a constraint that these businesses, most of the jobs and the employees they would retain are in low to moderate income jobs that would be meeting the HUD definition as people making 80% of less, 80% or less of the area median income. So if any Miami Beach small businesses meet that, that program is already up and running. And at the end of this meeting, or while you guys are still in the meeting, Rachel will send to your office a flyer about both the programs. So that's program number one. The other program that I conceived and we launched on Tuesday is called the Rise Miami-Dade Fund. The county has seeded that fund with $25 million, and that is set up to be a revolving loan fund. We know in COVID-19 that we're going to have some defaults, but the idea is if we put $25 million into this fund, that 18 or 20 of that can continue into the future. And that fund is also designed for the businesses that are of the size that, you know, they're, it's not that they're unbanked, right? They have banking accounts. They don't have the kind of access to credit that larger firms have. And so again, that will be for any businesses in the county that have less than 25 employees, and they're established businesses. They have a 2-year track record in the county. And that fund will be administered through We've partnered with the Dade Federal Credit Union because they have branches all over the county. They will packet, we will have one application process that will go through, but then each application will be assigned to a community development financial institution, the CDFIs. And those CDFIs, you've probably heard of quite a few of them, Acción, Partners for Self-Employment. But they are going to package those loans because these organizations are the ones that are used to working with businesses of this size. And they are also capable of providing technical assistance such as strategic planning, financial planning, marketing that can go along with the loan. There is a website. It's kind of a shell that launched yesterday, risemiamidade.com, where any businesses can go on and at least leave a contact, and then the credit union will notify them a couple of days before the application process goes live. We're setting up the governance for that, but we anticipate that we will be processing applications before the end of June. And the next phase of that project, I have been in conversations with numerous large banks and several foundations and other philanthropic institutions. It's been interesting in having these conversations. There are lots of organizations and companies that have always wanted the county to have a revolving loan fund dedicated to these micro and small businesses. We never had one with a governance structure that they could add capital into, and now it exists. And so the goal is, once this first round of money starts going out the end of June, is that I will be working to try to double the size of that fund by adding capital investment to it that doesn't come from the CARES Act, but comes from other organizations. So certainly Miami Beach businesses should get ready. There's an FAQ section on the little website. That'll be on the flyer I'll send to all your offices during the meeting. But it's certainly City of Miami Beach businesses should be thinking that they can apply if they meet the requirements. And I know $25 million sounds like a lot, plus the $5 million, that's 30, but we know this crisis is big. And so I'm very much looking forward to trying to get the private sector to also participate in the fund, because I think the funds will go out quite quickly given the level of economic distress that we are encountering. So wanted to make you guys aware of it. Would love your help in spreading the word. And of course, I'm always available for questions. And you all know Rachel Cohen, who is my staff member that helps so much on Miami Beach. She's also available for any questions. So thank you, Commissioner, for letting me at least share these programs that are available for Miami Beach businesses.
Thank you, Commissioner Higgins. I see Commissioner Richardson's hands is up.
No, Commissioner Higgins, you have information. You're going to have Rachel send to our offices so that we can distribute it to interested people, right?
Yes, we have a flyer. It's actually already typed up, and it'll be in your inboxes. It may even be there now, knowing how efficient Rachel is. So,
okay, thanks so much. Good to see you here. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Samulin, this was your item.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Commissioner Higgins, thank you for that. That was extremely helpful and I think a great first step getting the word out. I'm on your Rise Miami Dade. It's up and running, which is wonderful. We also are exploring options here from a city standpoint. Could you just talk a little bit about your vision for this program and how, if at all, cities like Miami Beach may participate as it expands and develops?
So similar to, let's say, a certain bank or a philanthropic organization wants to participate, they may, if they decide, some of the banks we're talking to are talking about $5 million, $10 million, $15 million, they may have community purposes that they want their money associated with. So they may say, we're willing to put money into the Rise Miami-Dade Fund, but it has to go to minority-owned businesses, or it has to go to women-owned businesses. So the county has set up the structure at the credit union so that anyone who wanted to add capital into the fund could put constraints. So, for example, if a municipality wanted to participate, they obviously, if it's coming from municipality, they are going to want those funds spent within their municipality. And so that governance structure is allowed and established, and the credit union would be able to accommodate, should Miami Beach want to participate, we would be able to make sure that those Miami Beach funds would obviously only go to Miami Beach businesses. The county funds are supposed to be this $25 million. We are supposed to do our darndest to make it as equal as possible around the 13 commission districts so that every district shares in, because it is federal money. Every district paid taxes to the federal government and it's coming back. But we could, through the credit union, structure something to allow municipalities to dedicate funding directly to their businesses. And I'm certainly, we could put you in contact, with the credit union, should that ever be something you all are interested in doing. The nice thing is we've set this up to be a permanent part of county infrastructure, to be a permanent fund. It's not just meant to just be a COVID response like some of the, like the other $5 million fund is. That's going to go out and that's going to be that. This is meant to live in perpetuity, to always help small businesses, whether it's during COVID or even at a later date. So
thank you. Commissioner Samuelin, anything else?
Yep. Just to maybe sort of wrap this up, at least from my standpoint. Thank you for that, Commissioner Higgins. I see a couple things that I would just like to, put on the table that we proceed. One, this just looks like a wonderful opportunity for our businesses. So I'm sure the city administration will be doing it, but I would like to encourage them to really quickly get this message out. It's a new program. It's new funding. Second, this is hot off the press. The county just decided Tuesday. They voted unanimously. I would request that the city administration take a meeting, go deep on it, learn more about it, see if at some point there may be an opportunity for us. Maybe it's now, maybe it's down the road, maybe it's not. We just don't know enough yet. But I would like to get the ball going on this because we do have so many businesses in need. We're talking about economic incentives. We're getting ready for a budget. I'd love to have this information in hand so that we can make those decisions. So those are the two concepts that I'd like to proceed with here as next steps, if my colleagues are okay with that.
Okay. Commissioner, okay. Yep, I don't see any hands. I think that makes sense. Anybody would like to add anything before we wrap it up?
Vice Mayor, we have been messaging this program actually out since the minute it was announced. In our daily messaging to businesses. We do a nightly or afternoon e-blast to businesses. And I think it's been in there for many, many days already, and we'll continue to do so. And our resource center certainly is available. If people need assistance or technical help, we can do that as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And again, thank you, Commissioner Higgins, for your initiative and for coming on today. And thank you, Mark, for bringing this forward. And we're going to wrap it up and move on to our final item, which is, very much related regarding our Small Business Assistance Program, R9C, which is sponsored by Commissioner Gongora.
R9C is an update on Small Business Assistance Program.
Thank you. Can I make a brief intro, Vice Mayor? Okay, thank you. In conjunction with the county, the city, we also were looking for funds that we could use to help small business. And we already allocated a repurposing of $200,000 to help our small businesses. This item came up at last Friday's meeting, kind of last minute, and there were a lot of unanswered questions and people that weren't able to review the program. As I understand it now, this will really be used to help really small businesses, unlike the county that helps businesses of 25 employees or less. This is targeted to companies now of 5 employees or less.
because it is a limited amount of money, there's a couple of questions that need to be, I guess, answered and prioritized by the commission today. The first question was kind of, do you want to prioritize businesses that are participating in the MB standard program, those that are safest and really ensuring the highest level of safety for their patrons, something that I would support. Number two, what amount of money do we want to use the grants? There was a question of whether we wanted to do a $10,000 or a $5,000 cap. I'm very much in favor of the $10,000 cap, especially in light of how onerous the application process is to get this money. I think if we want to really help businesses that we should do the higher amount. And then finally, like with the rental assistance program, do we want to do first qualified, first served, or a lottery? And there's pros and cons to both ways of doing it. First qualified, first served ensures that the businesses get the money sooner. It rewards those that keep their eye on the ball and are the first to apply. The lottery system allows a broader base of people. It delays getting the money. I'd be curious to hear from my colleagues what their thoughts are. For me personally, I don't have a strong preference, but I think if we properly communicate this program out, I would be okay with the first qualified, first served, provided everybody's on the same playing field and the program were to open on a set date, at a set time, and everybody were to have equal access to those monies. So I'm kind of okay with what the administration has laid out as option ones on all three of those questions. And it's my understanding from my conversation with Eric Carpenter yesterday that the city is also recommending option ones on the three questions.
Okay, thank you. Eric?
Yes, and you are correct, Commissioner. The recommendation of the administration is option one on each of the items that were in the memorandum. But we wanted to put it out there because we think it is worth discussing. And Amy Mayhew and Maria Ruiz have done a lot of work on this program. So I'd like to ask Amy to just say a few words about where we are and what we think this program can do.
Morning. I, with the utmost respect, with everything going on, I'd be remiss if I didn't touch on something. I implore this commission to do more as it pertains to race relations. Evaluating our police department's use of force does not address the core issue that is the reality here in Miami Beach. Beyond our police department, there is a very real lack of diversity and inclusion and respect for the Black and Brown community. I've had too many tearful conversations with my children over the past few days, explaining to them that they are loved and valued, and even some not, and even though some chose not to, it breaks my heart that as I tell them that, I reflect on the many, many times that I've trembled as I've heard words from our community members that at the very least have been tone deaf, but racially charged nonetheless, not loving or valuing the people that look like them or I. Each year, as certain periods in our year approach, I fear what will happen. I fear what would be said to me or in front of me, as often those comments have been filled with hate. I implore you all to do more. If our mission is diversity and inclusion, evaluate how our city is making that a reality for all people. I commend this body's efforts in supporting the LGBT community, but to stay silent for however small our African-American community is here on an issue that we've lived with all our lives that we cannot hide from and we are faced with day to day is heartbreaking to me. I appreciate Commissioner Ariola's desire to celebrate Juneteenth, but I ask for more, for recognition of those inequities, recognition of the lack of representation, and recognition of the pain that it inflicts. I can only speak for myself. And so for myself, I'm saying I am hurt. And I hope that my words don't fall on deaf ears. And I apologize for speaking about this prior to my item, but it's something real to me and something real that I face day to day here. And I ask that you represent us, your staff that works hard for you all, to do more and to speak onto our very real reality. And on that note, I can go very much into our item.
Thank you, Amy. Eric, why don't you let Amy catch her breath and then come back to us. Sure. Amy, that was very brave of you. Thank you. I applaud you. And I hear you.
So the particular item that we're talking about are the CDBG funds from the federal government, where we've identified $200,000 that we want to earmark for our micro businesses to help them recover from this COVID-19. It is a reimbursement program for expenditures related to the COVID impacts, and it's meant to help them get through this difficult reopening time and help with retaining low to moderate income employees. One of the requirements of the program, and maybe Maria can talk about this a little bit, is the requirement that for 12 months after the reimbursement of the expenditures, they have to prove that they've retained an employee at 80% of the AMI. Maria, you want to walk through that a little bit?
That's correct, sir. Actually, you said it perfectly. At the end of the day, these funds need to show that we're serving people who meet the income eligibility criteria, which is a maximum threshold of 80% AMI. And you're right. That's what it comes down to. So that job has to be retained for 1 year from the point that the assistance is provided. So we would be going back periodically to ensure that, in fact, that position is still available and filled by somebody who meets that criteria.
So thank you, Maria. As the commissioner basically laid out, the options that were on the table were the MB standard program. Option one was to earmark 50% of the grant dollars or the forgivable loan dollars to folks that have are participating in the MB standard program to make sure they're providing the highest level of protection to both their employees and the public that's utilizing those businesses. The second option would be to set the cap at $10,000 as opposed to $5,000. And the third would be the administration is recommending the first qualified, first served, so that after a robust advertisement period, we start accepting applications at a specific time, and then we go through the qualification process for those first folks applying for it. And as soon as they qualify, they get they become eligible for reimbursement of the funds. If anyone has any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Commissioner Arriola, your hand is up.
That was from before, so I can take it down. But yeah, look, I think we do have to help our small businesses. You know, my concern with any of this is, again, you know, government trying to make decisions like this as to, you know, which business gets what money. And one is being open to criticism, which is fine. But, you know, making the right call to truly help businesses that have the ability to actually stay in business and not make, you know, grants that that aren't really going to help a business stay in business. So, you know, how do we weed through requests for funding and the, you know, really the sustainability of the business, right? I don't want to just make a loan or a grant and then not see that business succeed.
So,
and I don't have the answer, but I'll volunteer to help, you know, be on any, you know, committee or draft plans, you know, being a business owner myself. But, you know, and you know, coming from a place that I know a lot about, which is, you know, it's nice to help businesses, but not all businesses are going to make it. And if we want to try to see our economy rebound, we do have to try to pick the winners from the ones who aren't going to be successful. And that's a really painful thing.
And we just have to be very clear about the fact that the qualification process is going to be, it's going to be uniform across the board. So it's not going to be necessarily a judgment call. It's going to be what qualifications do we set forth, and then everybody who meets those qualifications would be eligible for the reimbursement. Amy, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I would add that that there's some best practice. There's some practices out there that allow for a ranking system, like a rating system, similar to how we do for procurement. And that's an option that we can look into, although it would complicate and delay the process. But it does speak to your point, Commissioner Areola, of trying to ensure that whoever's receiving the award is going to last longer and continue to be a value to our economy. However, even if we don't use that type of ranking system in that format, there is, I think, any opportunity to encourage a business to stay in place is going to be an opportunity. Whether they've been successful in the past is an opportunity to continue keeping the economy in place.
Commissioner Richardson.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. I just want to confirm a couple of things. I know Amy and I had a conversation when the draft was put together, and I provided some feedback. But the proposal is for micro-businesses of five or less, including the owner. So I just want to confirm that this program is being proposed for up to five people, could be four employees and the owner. And I also, so I want to confirm that. Is that correct?
So a business would have two options. If it's a business with five employees, including the owner, and the only person who falls into that 80% AMI is the business owner, then they would be officially categorized as a micro enterprise under the HUD standard for the forgivable loan. If they are a business of five and it's retaining or creating a position that falls under the 80% AMI, then it just goes under the standard economic incentive business package for the HUD.
And what is the situation if it's a sole proprietor and there's only one, the owner is the only employer, the sole proprietor? How would they be eligible?
For the 80% AMI, they'd have to fall under 80% AMI.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I know last week we had some conversation about the types of expenses that could be offered, if you will, for payment. And I know we talked about rent and other things, which tend to be more big ticket items. And it seemed like there was some discussion from the commission that we thought these would be more types of expenses to reopen, like PPE and things like that, if businesses didn't have a cash flow to maybe get some inventory or stuff like that. But when I read this a couple of days ago when we talked, I think that it would include rent and payroll. Is that right?
Correct. And it includes the ability to purchase the different things that they need to part of reopening or as part of sustaining proper social distancing and social hygiene practices.
And do we have any idea how many businesses might be interested in this type of program? Is there any way of guesstimating?
Well, I can tell you that through our resource center, we often are calling, every day we're calling out to our businesses, and we have a survey that we go through with them to kind of gauge how many people have applied for other funding opportunities, how many of them actually received. We only got 100 down so far that have been successfully completed the survey, but out of them, 82 of them had not received funds that they applied for and would definitely look for funding opportunities if it were available. And they fall under the category of either being a sole proprietor or having five employees or less. And when it comes to the sole proprietorship, I want to highlight that it's not even about the people who are at home self-employed people. It's the salon worker. A lot of the different salon workers all are their own independent contractors. So they would be eligible to make up for some lost revenue that they missed out on while they were closed. And that's just a quick example of who we would be benefiting with.
So we think there's could be as many as 82 people that we know of that might be interested in this type of program.
Correct, at the very least.
So that kind of speaks to the quantity. If the recommendation is that we do 10,000, it's only going to be 20 businesses, but we already know that 82 people. So, I mean, I think that my feeling is that we have to be as objective as possible. And while I do not believe that there's any favoritism and anyone bringing their friends in the back door, I think that when you have a lottery system, when we already know that there are more people that will express interest than we have the capacity for, then we're having started the program and we already know we're going to have to turn people away. So for that reason, knowing that we have more than 80 people that we think would apply, I would be more in favor of doing $5,000 and having a lottery system. I would rather have a system where we open it up for 1 week. Anyone who wants to apply, if they get their application in during that week, even if we don't have time to process it all in 1 week, maybe it's going to take us a few extra days to process it. But I'm not comfortable making a decision that we know 82 people are interested, but we're only going to serve 20 and we're okay with that. So what I would propose is that we do 5,000 and service 40 and then keep it a lottery period open. So the application period open for a full week and then put that in and have a public drawing out of the hat. And then we're going to know how many people apply, and maybe it would be the will of this body to find another $200,000 or some other quantity of money to increase the 5,000 to 10,000 or to open it up for the people who were in the lottery that didn't get selected the first time. So that's kind of, those are my thoughts, Vice Mayor.
Thank you. Commissioner Gongora?
Yes. I don't have a strong preference on whether we do a lottery or a first come, first serve. If you do have a strong preference for a lottery, I don't mind moving in that direction. And I also agree that after we do the first round, so to speak, we're going to be able to better see really out of these 80, how many actually apply, because it's a lot of onerous paperwork. It's one thing to make a call and ask for assistance. It's another thing to fill out all these applications, show your bank statements, and put up the proof. I don't think we're going to have 80 that actually apply based upon what I've seen in the past. I do have a strong feeling, though, that we should do 10,000, because 5,000 isn't going to help these people. And going back to something Commissioner Ariola said, why are we going to give 5,000 bucks and then they're going to go out of business? If we're going to give some money, it's to keep them in business and keep them viable. So I do have a strong feeling that we stick to the $10,000 amount recommended by the administration. I agree with you that we should gauge how this works after, and maybe we will look for more money like we're doing with the rental assistance. And I'm okay if you want to do the lottery and you feel strongly about that.
So,
go ahead.
Thank you, Commissioner Gongora. The dollar amount's a tricky one because the whole goal is to keep people in business, right? And so, I don't know how much they're going to need if we think they could, and it's up to $10,000. It mm-hmm. doesn't mean that they would get $10,000. So I'm certainly flexible on that. The reason that I like the idea of having an enrollment period, if you will, or an eligibility period, is because then it's going to let us know what the interest is in the community. If we cut it off at 20, then we're not even going to know if there's another 20 we can serve. So by having the eligibility period, we'll know that there's going to be maybe 30 or 40 or 50, and that'll give us information if we want to come back and try to find some more money. We'll at least know what the potential universe is. So yeah, let's I would be comfortable moving forward with up to 10,000, but having a 1 week eligibility. I don't want to keep the eligibility open for a month because we need to get this money out as quickly as possible. So I think if we move in that direction, we should say, let's have the eligibility period for a week, and no later than, a week after that, we have to draw the lottery, just if the administration needs the time to process. So those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, okay. Commissioner Mike.
Thank you, Vice Mayor, and thank you, Commissioner Gregora, for bringing this item up, and Commissioner Richardson for your comments. I do favor the lottery program just to make sure that everyone does have an opportunity to get their application in. I think that we decided to go that route, and with the rental assistance, and I think it makes sense here. As far as the money, I wonder, since we're sort of guesstimating how many people will apply, whether we can kind of make decisions on the go, maybe a minimum 5,000 up to 10,000, and perhaps we'll see how many people apply. Maybe it could be some other number in the middle. Just a suggestion. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Gongora?
Okay. These are great comments. I'm happy to hear more, but I move that we move forward with it. We do the up to $10,000 amount. We can favor the MB standard program. And that we do a lottery, but that it be a very short lottery, not to exceed 5 days, with the drawing to be within 3 days afterwards, so we can get this money moving. And then we'll have an idea of what the demand is. And if there is more of a demand, let us know. And I'm sure one of us will put it on the agenda. I'll be happy to. I'm sure Commissioner Richardson would be happy. We can do it together to find more money to the extent we need it. So that would be my motion.
And yes, Commissioner Samuelin's hand is up.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. I am very happy that the administration did include the MB standard program. That was something that I had advocated for. So before I weigh in on the other parts, I do have a question for the administration. Is there any reason, or is there a strong preference on the first element of the MB standard, whether it's 50% or 100%? Just would like to hear the thinking on that element.
Amy, you want to jump in and I'll follow up?
I was going to just say that I wanted to be, I were attempting to be cautious, not sure what the appetite was for wanting to add that extra layer of requirement, seeing as it already is an onus process to get the dollars. So it was the idea of splitting it so that at least there's some money that's earmarked for ensuring that people are trying to be a part of our higher standard of awareness for mitigating the spread. But it is definitely something that we would appreciate and value if having it be a standard that's applied across the board, but recognizing that it is putting an extra measure on top of already onerous processes.
Yeah, yep. I just wanted to add that we didn't want to freeze folks out if they felt like they couldn't get to the MB standard on this grant program. So echoing what Amy said, I think we just wanted to have the opportunity for both sides of the house to apply.
And there's the ability to, and gauging how much, if there isn't much interest into applying for it with the extra standard, we could always move those funds over so it's not held up and not available to others, but and monitor it that way.
Okay, thank you for that. On the items that have been discussed, I do support the lottery. I just think that adds a level of transparency. And I do support the $10,000. I think we're trying to maximize impact here. So those are my thoughts on those two elements.
Thank you. We do have a motion on the floor. Commissioner Arriola, your hand is up.
I just second everything that's been said. I just want to put a fine point on what Commissioner Gongora said about the 10,000. It was the point I was trying to make. I see very often, whether it's nonprofits or governments, you try to be help everybody, but by making it so either small or sometimes difficult to get, you end up helping nobody. You do have to sometimes just pick winners and losers, because if it's to try to keep companies and businesses, some will make it and some won't. You have to do your very best to identify which has the highest likelihood of making it.
And so having a higher dollar amount will help more than just giving everybody a little bit.
Okay, do we have a second for Commissioner Gongora's motion?
No,
Commissioner
Richard? I just want a couple clarifications. So to Amy's point on the program, if half would be reserved, or that's a proposal, then how would we handle a lottery if somebody were next in line, but then we've already fulfilled? So maybe, Commissioner Gongora, you would entertain that it would be our preference that everybody participate in the program, but it not be a requirement, so that when we have a lottery system, because I think we have to be consistent if there's a lottery. So we need to say everybody or everybody, it's a requirement for everybody, or it's a preference, so that the lottery doesn't kick some people out because they were the next in line and 50% already been achieved. So perhaps I would offer an amendment to say it would be our preference that they participate in their program, but it would not be a requirement. And the other clarification, Commissioner Gongora, is when you said 5 days, and as I did, I think we're talking about 5 business days, mm-hmm. and you're saying 3 days, you mean 3 business days. So Monday through Friday, and then by Wednesday or Thursday morning of the next week, that would be, you're talking business days, I think.
Yes. Yes to the business days. And as to the other, I think what the administration is recommending, which I was okay with, they want to encourage people to do the Miami Beach standard. So as I understood it, they were setting aside 100,000 for those and 100,000 for the companies that don't necessarily apply. So I guess the way that they're proposing it, you'd have 2 lottos. Right. If you're an MB standard, you'd be in a lotto to get 1/2 of the money. And if you're not, you're in the lotto to get the other half. Is that correct, Eric?
Yes, it would be that way. And then if we had money left over from the MB standard program, we would bring that back to you to move it over to the other.
I would think if we go this direction, that you just would automatically move it over. If you don't use it all on the MB standard companies, I guess if you're doing both simultaneously. I do the MB standard lotto once, and if you don't get at least 10 applicants, that you just move that money to the other side.
I think it's going to be difficult, because what if I said I want to be in both lotteries? I'll either do it or I won't do it, because that'll increase my chances. So I think that's why I think it's going to be difficult to have 2 different programs. So is there a way that we can have consistency so that everybody has, the way the lottery is, it's going to get complicated, and people might need to hire a professional lottery player to figure out what the odds are on being successful here. So, but I think if we just have the rules the same for everybody and put everybody in the same lottery, it's going to be better. Is there a way that we can provide uniformity?
Commissioner, to your point, and we'll do however directed, but we wouldn't have available to a business to apply for both the MB standard and the other option. It would be one application in which they're either applied for with the MB standard, or they're applied for the regular $100, $100,000.
But to that point, so if
it would be 2 running lotteries.
If I fill out my application and you say to me, I see you're filling out the application for the MB standard, and we already have 30 people that have done that, but there are only 5 people that have applied for the non-program. Let me whisper in your ear and tell you, maybe you should apply for the other program, because you would automatically get it. You see, I just want to take out the possibility that there's this potential problem that will come back, will be criticized in that case if you have 10 people in one lottery and 50 people in another lottery. I don't know. I'm just throwing out. It concerns me.
Yeah, okay, I understand. You're trying to be proactive. And Commissioner Gongora, and then Commissioner Samuelin's hand just came up.
Okay, right. You either do one or the other. If you want to prioritize MB standard, then the way that the administration is recommending it would be the way to go. I happen to believe you're going to have less people apply for the MB standard than you do for the people that don't
follow the standard. So I think the scenario in your mind that could be a conflict is going to be reverse. I think there's going to be few MB standard, a lot more. I don't even know if you're going to get 10 companies that apply that are doing MB standards. So that money, in my mind, would automatically get moved to the other group. Otherwise, you're just removing that. There's no way to say we'd like you to do it unless you tie it to the money. So the other option is we just do away with that qualification and we just put in the whole 200 into one lottery and we remove that as a qualification. All companies, 5 businesses or less that qualify can apply for this money and we won't be promoting the MB standard.
Yep. Or you could make it a requirement for everybody. That's another. And then because as we know, we think there'll be more people applying, then we could require it and then it would maybe reduce the number of people applying and the people that do apply would have a greater chance of the lottery. That's just another option.
Yep.
Commissioner Samuel.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I am open to what Commissioner Richardson said. If we want consistency and having everyone meet that standard, we are saying that's the best practice. That's what our health advisory committee advised us. And if we have a situation where there's not as much demand, in round two, we could open it up. So I think that's an intriguing option. If we do want to have the two piles, I agree with Commissioner Gongora that we could have two separate lottos. But I do feel strongly that the MB standard be part of it. So I would like to see either Commissioner Richardson's suggestion of the one lottery, everyone's going to make MB standard. If we don't get much demand, we'll open it up. I mean, that's not a hard problem. On the other hand, if we do want to have the two lotteries, we could have one MB standard one, which is so-called option one, the administration. But I do feel like the MB standard is going to be part of it and that we are using this opportunity to raise the bar of public safety for the community.
Commissioner Minor.
I want to concur with Commissioner Samuel, and I think we want to try to incorporate the MB standard as and promote it as much as possible.
Okay, so we've now heard from 3 commissioners. Commissioner Arriola, do you feel a preference?
I personally would rather open it up to everybody because that's the only way we're going to be able to gauge the real need in the community. The more you limit it, the less you get an accurate reflection of who needs the money. So if we open it only for companies that are doing MB standard, then we don't know. We're not going to have a real reflection of what's out there and what the community wants or need. I actually like the administration's way because it prioritizes a pool of money for people that are doing the MB standard that we want to do. But then it leaves open a pool so that we can get a true reflection of what the community really needs and who's out there applying.
Commissioner Arriola?
Yeah, I support Commissioner Gongora on this. And I think the sort of the MB standard, while it's a, you know, nice goal to pursue, it's, you know, in many cases unattainable. And I don't know that it's very useful. But yeah, I can open it to a larger pool.
So you want to follow the administration's guidelines is what you're saying?
Yeah.
And that was my motion, actually, that's on the table.
And if
can we just be clear that the proposal is to have two lotteries, is that right?
Yeah, you could call it that, but it's two pools. You either apply, if you check the box that you're MB standard, then you'll be prioritized for that set of money. And if you're not, you're applying in the other pool. Then once the lottery is done, we'll have a reflection of how many companies have actually applied and qualified. And we'll be able to make a determination whether we want to look to the general fund for more monies to help assist again for more micro businesses.
Do you accept Commissioner Richards? I guess it's just a semantics of making sure it's 3 business days, 5 business days, as opposed to just 3 and 5, right?
Yeah.
Commissioner Richardson, Samuelin, or Minor, any final comments? Because we do have a motion on the floor and a second by Commissioner Arriola, I believe. Nope. All right, so all in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Nope. Hearing none, passes unanimously.
And that was our final item. Are there any announcements, Mr. Clerk, on any other items, or are we finished with business?
We're finished with business, but the mayor was absent on that last item.
Okay. Amy, I just want to say before we adjourn that your comments and your experiences are so very important. And it was very brave of you to share them with us. And I want you to know that we're listening. So thank you. And with that, meeting adjourned. Oh, sorry, Commissioner Gongora.
Yeah, no, thank you. I echo your comments. Amy, we heard your comments, and I want you to feel that we are a city and a commission that exemplifies diversity at all levels. So support the African-American community and the emotions that you described. I don't want you to feel that they're not supported by the commission, because they are. That's why I also supported Commissioner Ayola's idea to do an event on June 19th, because it's such an important date, and I want to see that happen. So I also wanted to make that comment. I also wanted to ask very briefly from the administration, I've been getting a lot of messages today about a protest planned for North Shore Open Space Park today. And if that is happening in the city, I think if we could get a brief summary of it and let the public know what's happening.
Chief Clemens, are you on? I know he had mentioned there was some word of something at noon, maybe, but Rick? Anyone on from police?
Just give me one. Sir, Rick Clemens. Yes, sir.
Chief, the question was about, is there a protest planned up at North Beach Oceanside Park?
Not that we're aware of. We do know of a demonstration that we got on social media that was in North Shore Park. Okay, and that's set for 12 o'clock today. The pop-ups and the pop-up demonstrations are happening quite frequently. You know, we're getting them at the last minute via social media. There's nothing that they're going to city to do. I've heard the clamorings, if you will, about Open Space Park, but I've also heard that they want to go to in front of the police station. But there's really no definitive group of people that we know that are actually going there. It's just chatter right now is what we're getting.
Thank you. And I guess all of a sudden, more hands are up. Mm-hmm. So Commissioner Minor, your hand is up. It is down. Commissioner Arriola.
Thanks, Mickey, for discussing Amy's comments. I was very moved by them. I know it's difficult. Amy, we hear you. We support you and the African-American community. Just want to let it be known there's to be no repercussions to Amy for speaking her mind. And I know that no one would do that, but I just want to be on record for that. Our employees, anyone in City Hall, any resident should be free to speak their mind. To us, especially, it's something so deeply personal to them, and never fear repercussion. That is how we have an open and safe democracy. You know, Amy, we're going to do everything in our power to be the leader in the country on this issue. So thank you for speaking your mind.
Thank you.
Commissioner Samuel?
Yeah, I just want to ditto my colleagues' comments. We are a diverse, open community to all, and Amy is a highly respected member of our team who brings a unique perspective to us, and we appreciate you sharing it, and we are supportive of what you said.
Agreed. And so with that, anybody else have any comments that they'd like to add? Now the meeting is adjourned.